wasn't too much out there in Washington County, so I'm glad that we're giving them to show our support of the National Preservation Week. Once again, I'm Devin McLaughlin, and this is my partner, Marvin McCoo, and we work for the Washington County Center. And we are conducting a cultural resource survey of the Hillsborough area, future urban area. And broadly defined, for our purposes, cultural resources are the remaining physical evidence of human activity. And these can include anything from buildings, structures, sites, districts, objects, prehistoric and historic archaeological remains. And that's what we're concerning ourselves with in our survey. These categories are considered resources because they are in study, they are a study of ourselves and people. And an example of that could be such as an archaeological site that could provide additional insight about common lifestyles of past inhabitants in this area. And there's quite a lack of information on Indian sites, burial sites, and Aboriginal information in the Washington County area. They're just, the information is there, you know, it's just that there hasn't been that much research or study on it. So we hope to, in our year's time, we probably won't be able to do a thorough research of those sites, but if we can just find out where they are and then document that for later research, that's pretty much what our goal is. The need for management of cultural resources involves a process of identification of the available resources, and we must know what we have before we can try to save it in any way. So that's the main purpose for our cultural resource survey. And our cultural resource survey and subsequent inventory will satisfy this requirement. First of all, the survey will document the resources, the background data, and historical character of our community through fieldwork and historical research. And then this raw data will be gathered and examined, and then this will tell us a little bit more about our community. The next step that we'll take will be to refine and turn that survey information into an inventory. And the way we do this is to get a selected list of resources chosen from the survey raw data because they meet the standards of predetermined criteria. And we'll be using the criteria that the National Register uses. Are you familiar with that? What that is? Have you ever heard of people nominating a site to the historical resource at historical national? Thank you. Well, there's 13 specific points that Embry Farms in Washington County is another one. The right has also, well, that's pending. They nominated it, but it hasn't gone to the And this consists of 13 points that have to be satisfied in order to pass what we consider, you know, the most important parts to be included on our inventory. And
the responsibility of preservation is not stop at identifying our cultural resources. And it is also necessary to manage the identified cultural resources to ensure their survival. However, not all of these identified resources will be able to survive because some of them will have to make way for further growth because we are a fast-growing, expanding culture. However, as much as possible should be documented so that we'll have a record of their existence. So we'll refer back to them and know how we live and we'll also know how we progress. Okay, to help decide which resources are worthy of preservation, as Deborah said before, they have to be evaluated on predetermined criteria. And once certain cultural resources have been set aside as worthy of preservation, some form of management has to be set up to ensure their survival and maintenance. And preferably this type of management would be provided for in a city or a county ordinance. And the ordinance is preferred because it's a law set up by the people of the community or of the area. Because these natural resources that they want to ensure their survival belongs to those people in the area. And the required management is on their behalf. So if they have something that's theirs forever, or forever is a long time, but for as long as possible. Okay, at this, now I'm going to talk to you about what we've done, what we hope to do. Okay, at this moment, we haven't gone out to the field yet. We've done a lot of research and background data and map work, getting very familiar with our area. And this gives us a feel about Hillsboro. Neither Deborah or I have ever lived in Hillsboro. I've just moved there. And so it's beginning to become my town, but then learning so much more about it. We know how it's grown. We know why it's grown now because of our research. So far, we have concerned ourselves with the early history of the area around the 1840s when the first white settlers came out. Now, the first white man that we know of that came to this area were three men, Joseph Meek and Mr. Newley. They were brother-in-law, accompanying their sisters, and a man called William Dowdy. And they meet a Greek man in 1836 around that area. And they were the men that brought the first white settlers over. And we'll share that with you a little later. Okay, to make our legwork easier, going off that iron pavement, and to hold the research down to a minimum, Deborah and I are going to start with the 1850 city boundaries. In 1850, Hillsboro had pretty much been established as the county seat. Before then, there had been a lot of competition with other areas surrounding Hillsboro for that position. And from there, we'll work up to the 1890s. Boundaries and on up to the present city limits and on up to the future urban growth, the projected city limits of the future. And the reason we're starting with the oldest areas first is because that's where most of the changes have occurred, and we want to get in there as fast as we can, record what is there so that if at a future date we do lose it, we'll know what was there and we have some kind of tangible remains of it.
I'd like to interject something else while I'm thinking of it. A couple of weeks ago, we went out one afternoon it was the first day that we actually gone out and decided we'd just go out and try and familiarize ourselves with some of the downtown area around the city square. And a couple of weeks before that, when we first started, we had 2 weeks of intensive training with some professionals from a consulting firm, the Atlantic Group in Portland. And anyway, that we'd been out in the car looking around, and we saw an old house that looked like it had been deserted. It was abandoned, and it looked like it had been abandoned for quite some time. So last week, when we were out walking around, we happened to pass by the house again, and it was half gone. They were in there with the bulldozers right then. So we ran back home, and we got the camera out. We took a picture to get as much as we could before, and it's gone. You know, it was gone by the next day or the next afternoon. So. That's how critical it is to at least have a picture of some of these resources so you know it's there, and not just existing.
Okay, when we start our field work for the survey, it'll basically be a matter of going to tax lot, and asking questions of the owners when we find a site that looks very significant. And I might add that most of the sites that we will be looking at will basically be buildings and houses and barns, because basically that's what we have in this area, even though that's not the only thing that a site's defined as. Okay, when we begin our final inventory, and as Douglas said, inventory is boiling down the survey, just kind of the more important things, the more significant things. We'll be doing more research for each of these sites that we thought potential. And as mentioned before, we're using a criteria based on the National Register form to make our final selection. This will include such things as what type of site it is, like an archaeological site, a building, commercial and private. What's being used for, what type of architecture it is, if it's a building. And we're going to describe the condition it's in and what significance it might have held the community, historical or otherwise.
Okay. Now we're back to what I think is one of the most important things, and that's the reasons and the purposes to conduct cultural resource survey. And ours, we're presuming, will have many important functions for our community and for the surrounding communities. First of all, it will comply with the 1974 Land Conservation and Development Commission, I'm sure you're familiar with LCDC, goal number 5. And I'll read for you from that. There's a quote that says, "Programs shall be provided that will protect historic areas. The location, quality, and quantity of the following resources shall be inventoried: historic areas, sites, structures, and objects." And we're including all those and just a few more, so that our survey will be all inclusive. Secondly, the inventory will serve as a test model for the future countywide survey, which is at the present still in the planning stages. There's a few problems right now, but hopefully within the year we'll have that going. Third, the inventory will provide the Hillsborough City Planning Department with cultural resource information that's necessary for the city land use planning and development programs. We feel that this is a very important part of what the survey will provide, because Hillsborough right now is growing in leaps and bounds. I'm sure it's the same out here in the forest, this area. And also, I happen to live in West Slope, which is still part of Portland. Well, it has Portland address, but it's Washington County. And I've been there for just a little over a year and a half, and already I've seen just that 18 new condominium complex is going up every time I go by. So, if the planning department has detailed information of where a historical site is located, then hopefully if we get an ordinance passed, that will have that holds validity in the when someone's trying to go through and tear them down and put some track points in there. And I don't mean to sound that we're going to try and keep everything standing up, because that's impossible. But a few things, and then we'll also have the information on things that are set, that do set to go down. And fourthly, once the individual properties of cultural value are documented in the inventory, the community and private businesses can then begin to work towards revitalizing commercial, residential, and industrial areas. There are many monetary benefits to restoring and recycling historical buildings. I think a good example of that is that I know of, because I'm more familiar with Portland, but that's the old town part of Portland. So I don't know exactly how many people were there, but there were definitely some people there with some money, and they went in and, you know, I'm sure there's not quite a few monetary bills into it, but they also will pay off for nice expenses. And recycling architectural resources can mean economic savings in the energy, time, and natural resources. With rising costs of natural resources and labor, this is a feasible alternative to non-growth. So hopefully if a building can be reused instead of having to tear it down and reconstruct a new building, that might save $2. When such buildings and districts are recycled, they generate not only economic growth, but a social acceptance of previously non-profitable sections of town. And I'd like to make an objection too. As Mrs. Cowan mentioned, I'm a graduate of Pacific University and I lived in this area in Forest Grove for 4 years. And in those 4 years, Forest Grove is kind of my home, my place. And I've always been proud of the buildings that have gone down, not Main Street and Pacific Avenue. I've always liked walking down there, looking at the old buildings, and I was just thrilled when the old Johnson Place was brought back to life. And that's a good example, too, of restoration, reusing an old building for a small business that can become very profitable. The fifth point, and we have that the inventory will also be available to all interested citizens and historical researchers. And that would be not only the finished product, which is the inventory, but also the survey and all the raw data would be there for whoever needs, you know, that type of information. It probably won't be, it will be much more broad in scope, but if there's something that and lastly, but of equal importance, the inventory will contain information on cultural resources that in some way contributed to the development of the Hillsboro area. The past, the knowledge of the past, gives the community a sense of history and place. Our community needs to maintain a link with the physical elements of the past and provide the foundation for cultural preservation. Therefore, we believe the vision should be made to preserve cultural resources of historical importance to our community and to our heritage. Feel that now is the time for tomorrow. Now I want to share with you some of the history that we've learned about Hillsboro. One of the things that we've been doing in the last week intensively is some research on the original owners of the donation land claims. The ones, there's six that make up the majority of Hillsboro.
Yeah.
And we brought a map to show you the boundaries and the DLCs that can everybody see that? Okay. Now this is Hillsboro, the limits of it today.
Yes.
The orange is the limits. Is the Hillsboro city limits, and the green are the DLCs. Now, I'll point out the major DLCs to you right now. This is Wheelock Simmons donation land claim. Now, this originally used to be David Hill's property, but unfortunately he died before the donation land claim deal went through, so his widow was unable to claim it in his name.
She was married within, what is it, 3 months?
To Wheelock Simmons, as he claimed it for. Smart lady.
Yeah, right there.
And this land up here is Isaiah Kelsey's land.
This is Michael Moore.
Michael Moore. Richard Williams. Now, where's Davis? Henry Davis is down here.
And this is
Wilcox.
Okay. Those are the main ones. Those are the ones that we've been spending most of our time on.
And this area right in here, from about here and on down, are the 1980 city limits. So you can see it started out, see this little tiny square is right here?
That's where the courthouse
is. Yeah. That's where the original 1850 town site was. And you can see that it's just grown that way. We haven't figured out yet why it didn't grow symmetrically. We'll find out somehow. Okay, as we mentioned before, there were six main men or families that owned the DLCs in that immediate area. Woolley was one. His family eventually moved into Forest Grove. William Richards, Henry Davis, Wheelock Simmons, Richard Wilcox, Kelsey, and more. Okay, we're just going to talk about a few of them. Okay, first, I'd like to introduce David Hill. Okay, he was one of the first settlers in the Hillsboro area. He was born in Connecticut in 1809, and he moved to Oregon in 1841 and settled in Walton Plains area in 1842.
he played an important role at Shampui. I'm sure you're all very familiar with Shampui.
Okay. Is that the way it's pronounced?
That's good. And he served as one of the three provincial governors. He shared his position with Alison Beers and Joseph Gale. And I believe Gale's in the Forest Grove area. Yeah, Gale Street. In fact, he was one of the, he built the first grist mill in this area, I believe. Okay, and David Gale was the chairman of this legislative committee, and he also sold 40 acres of land, the 12th district, for $200 for a county seat and a town site. Okay, no money changed hands. The city was supposed to, or the district was supposed to pay him back by selling off this land and lots. We don't know if he ever got paid or not because he died shortly thereafter.
Seriously, let's find out how.
Okay, and until, and later Isaac Kelsey also donated some land in which the later courthouse was built on. But until that land was donated, until the courthouse was built, court was held in a lot in a large cabin that happened to be on David Hill's property that he donated. We haven't figured out if it was originally his cabin or if it was built later. Okay, and he's also the first postmaster of the area. When he set up the post office in 1849, he named the town Columbus. And previously, the area had been known as East Walton Plains. And Forest Grove was known as the West Walton Plains. And the town was not known as Hillsboro until sometime after Hill's death in 1849. He died 7 months before the United States government passed the donation land claim, or as Deborah and I will refer to it as the DLC abbreviation. Okay, that bill was passed in 1850, and as a result, his wife of 4 years, Lucinda Carter McWilliams Wilson, was unable to claim the land in her husband's name because provisions for widows and orphans were not made until 1853 when the bill was amended. Okay, and around November 1850, Lucinda married Wheelock Simmons, who was then able to claim the land.
6 and 4 years.
Yes, because he
had quite a large parcel.
Okay, and Lucinda had been married three times before she married Simmons, and she had only one child, Mary McWilliams, by her first husband.
They all died.
Two of them died on the way over.
She and made it through.
Yes, she was a very determined lady. Okay. She finally found the stuff in that boy. You were married for 27 years. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit on Henry Davis. Henry Davis came later than the other six. The other five were pretty much settled in this area by 42. Some of them had come over with Hill, like Kelsey and Williams. They traveled on the same ride and came together. The reason I wanted to bring in Henry Davis is because he was a character, and as a consequence, he's my favorite. I love characters. Okay, he was born in 1812 in Chatham, England. He's an Englishman. And he settled his claim in 48. He came over in 45 and settled his claim in 48. Okay, when he came over, he brought stones for a grist mill. He lugged them all the way from St. Joe, Missouri to the Blue Mountains, and he had to bury them because he couldn't get any further. And a year later, he went back with his ox team and he brought them back. In 48, with some help of some friends, and I believe, in fact, A.T. Smith, who's from this area, helped him put up.
Donald Hines Smith.
He helped him put up his grist mill. Okay. Yeah, now, his grist, you all know where the old Pioneer Cemetery is. You're familiar with that. Okay, there's a creek, I believe, that runs behind it. And that's where he constructed his mill. Okay, in 1851, he became a naturalized citizen. In order to keep your DLC, if you weren't born in America, you had to become a naturalized citizen or give intent to become a naturalized citizen before December of 51. Okay? And when he died in 78, he was still considered a New York, so he's been in New York for a long time. The reason he was a character is that he had a nickname. It was called Mr. Roundhog Davis. And the reason he was called Roundhog was because he was not too particular about the way he dressed and his appearance. He used to wander around in the wintertime without no shoes on, but then he sat for a hat.
Loved by all.
Yes, okay, I have a little more information on Isaiah Kelsey. And I'd like to explain that one of the reasons that we're doing this research on the DLCs and some of the very early history of the pioneers is that we are trying to trace back what is now on the land, or what we know of Hillsborough now, and trace it back to see if they have any roots in the early history. And this was possible with Isaiah Kelsey. He was born in 1820 in Barron County, Kentucky. And he had a huge family, cousins and more cousins and brothers and sisters. And they all decided to come out west. Well, half of his family decided to come out at the same time. They came over in 1840. And there was his father and his mother, three brothers, a sister, and various kids, lots of kids. And Isaiah Kelsey is the only one out of all. Well, he had one sister that settled in around the Dallas area, but he's the only one, he and his sister are the only ones out of about 10 adults that decided to stay in Oregon. The rest of them were a little fancy footed, and they decided to move on. Once they did in Oregon, they decided to move on to California. And there is quite a large clan of them, well, there was in California, and it was named Kelseyville. So that shows you how many people
were there. The whole
population? There's some very interesting stories about them, but I won't go into it because they were just a wild, wild group of people. Anyway, Isaiah was the only one that had that in a sense. He decided, he came to Oregon, and he settled his claim on January 1st, 1842, and he and his wife, who he married on the banks of the Platte River when they were en route to Oregon, he married Winifred Williams, and her whole family was also migrating over. And I think Marjorie and I surmised that maybe one of the reasons that they stuck around in Oregon was that her father and mother owned the next DLC right next door, so they might have had an iron hand over for Isaiah. Anyway, Isaiah and Winifred arrived in the Willamette Valley, like I said, in 1841, and they settled their claim in Hillsborough. And they had eight sons and two daughters, and we believe that there was a few daughters that stayed in Oregon, but we have only been able to find information on one son, and that's Frank Kelsey, who was, he was around until I think he passed away in 1932. But anyway, how we came upon some information on Bagley Park, and as it turns out, Bagley Park, is the park that's closer to the downtown area in Hillsborough, and it was part of Isaiah Kelsey's DLC, and they sold a 4-acre block area to Cecilia and William Adams, and they sold that amount for $100 in 1864. And they were the ones that built the original house and a private school in the area. And then it was passed down in 1870. They sold to the Griffins. Yeah, the Griffins. The same 4 acres. And then again in 1885, it was passed down to William Thorne and his wife, and there's an 1890 in Thorne's edition, which
We were going to bring the map, but the lines are so light, we didn't even be able to see it back here. But we have a map penciled in with all the additions and the years that they were added to the city, and that's how we're going to progress in our survey procedures. And then in 1909, the 4 acres were bought by George Bagley, and he is the one that's originally donated the land to the city. But there's a funny story. We tried to figure out why would he, was he a good Samaritan, or was there a reason for him donating his land to the city? And it turns out that the reason that he donated the land was because the city was putting in 3 side streets around the 3 sections of his land. And the pay, the assessments were so high that he decided to just give the land away because he couldn't afford it. So we're blessed with Bagley Park to this day. And it still exists, and it's a children's park. It's still there. So that's probably the procedures that we'll be using that we will definitely probably include Bagley Park on our survey because it has a pioneer history behind it. So that gives you an idea of how we'll be going about it. So, I guess that includes everything, and we welcome any questions if anybody has any questions for us.
How long the time do we have to do this?
We have 1 year. And that is unless our funds are cut.
You have another full year besides this?
Well, we've only been working for 5 weeks.
Oh.
So we just started, more or less. We're just getting our footage. But actually, you're the first people that we talked to, so mm-hmm. we didn't make too much sense. you were kind of our guinea pigs for our presentation.
Have you actually started any surveying?
No, we hope to be out by next week. That's our goal. We are also, I don't know if I mentioned, we're also, besides working for the museum, we're also getting funding through the city planning department. So they would like to have some information by September. They want to have something written down and together. So we really have to get ourselves rolling. And we're just about ready. But I think we decided that the main part was to get all our procedures down pat before we went out, so that once we were out in the field, we could just know exactly what we want to do.
Will you be surveying the surrounding country, like those that started farms or logging operations or anything like that in the old days?
Well, only that which falls in the Hillsborough City Limits.
Hopefully, if and when the Washington County survey gets underway, that will be included then.
So that will include Forest Grove and Beaverton and Tiger,
just
and
the whole area.
Will you be listing existing houses and who lives in them now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We'll be using a form that we're using is similar to the one they use for the National Register, but it's 3 pages long, so there's quite a lot of information on each individual site. And okay, if there's no more questions, I have some handouts here if anybody would care to. We have a letter of introduction that. Excuse me, it says Dear Hillsborough Citizen, but just disregard that because this is for people that we meet within the community. But if you'd like more information on what we're doing, that's what this provides. And I also brought some of our express. This is published by the Washington County Museum, and it just gives lots of information about county activities and what the museum's up to. There's, I think, about 15 candidates here. And also, in case none of you are aware, or even if you are aware, the Washington County Museum is attempting to get enough funds to build a new museum out at the Rock Creek PCC campus. Rock Creek PCC? It's out on 185th.
Until
the end of the line. She crosses the island. I don't know how. There's signs from the freeway and from
almost from the state north end of the county.
Right.
The line is called the island.
Right. If any of you have ever been to our museum, you remember that we're in an old 1889 house that is not all that big, and so we really need some more room to expand. So if you drop by the museum, we have the plans up on the board, and we have an architectural model of the new museum. So we have quite a few people out there working for some fun, so it's hopefully in the near future. So if anyone would like some information, that's something else too.
I have sort of plugged for the new museum, and that is that this noon there was a meeting in the museum here in Hillsborough, which I attended, and we had to finish our meeting on the front porch because all the school children came in. And so that building is really big.
Well, that's two rooms of exhibits, and they're about the size of a medium. Each room is about the size
small.
Of a medium living room.
Yeah, it was small. Marjorie and I, we were upstairs when the meeting was there today at lunch, trying to find a little solitude to do our work. Usually, we sit down at the lower table, which is right in the middle of the museum. So we have an average of one busload of kids that come in a day. At least it's been like that for the last couple of weeks. So every time those 30 kids come, Marjorie has to pack up all our stuff and run upstairs and go to the attic and find a space on the floor. We get our work done, but it's a little inconvenient, but that's all right. So I guess that's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Well, that's
good.
Thank you.
Yes, it was pretty LCDC too.
It was
pretty LCDC. That's what I thought. Dr. Gilbert did the survey in Denver, so she had a committee of citizens and started out to list all the houses in Forestville over 75 years old. I think we're at the original. And they got up to even more. They try to get all those people definitely over 100 years old, and the older ones, but some of those that were, they didn't get every single one listed, but it was
huge,
over 75.
Yeah. Especially for Coastville, and some really beautiful old homes.
Yeah, we're familiar with them.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, we read it.
I was thinking that that would be a good source.
I was curious, was there a time limit on how long you had to do
this?
Yeah,
3 months.
3 months.
Yeah, 3 months from the time we were appointed until the report had to
be. That was a huge work. It was, we thought it was really inclusive as far as, like I say, the house and building.
The Hillsborough got an extension on its date. The details of UCs are supposed to be in this for a lot.
Yeah. I think Forest Grove and the board, well, that was included, but I think there's only a couple of communities that had their support even handed it in already. So
it's started.
So it's something that's not going to be, they're extending. I think they're going to extend for most of these schools. People just haven't gotten around to them. There was one thing I was really pleased to see in Forest Grove survey, and that was a suggestion for a commercial district, your downtown commercial district of all your old buildings. I was really pleased to see that. Now, whether or not the city's going to act on that, I don't know. It would be a shame if they don't.
A question, there was a reference to a proposed city ordinance. Has there been any change taken up on that?
The ordinance is all drawn up, but nothing has been passed because there have been debates about, particularly about some of the zoning parts. So the whole thing is kind of hanging in limbo.
Yeah, it's really difficult, especially with old buildings, to get the zoning.
Is all drawn up.
To get the zoning.
The Historic Preservation Commission would advise the planning department.
Well, we visualize our the part that we have on buildings to be probably similar to. I think our forms are a little more detailed, but the only difference I can see is that we're going to, like I say, include all the structures and bridges and archaeological sites and things like that. So that's a year will probably be just enough coming.
We'll talk about archaeological sites, and we have another one that's concerned about some transitory Indian markers on rocks. It's Gardens Valley, but that's not Hillsborough.
There's a lot of
information around. There are places. I mean, you talked about there are places where there are solid remains of living life here. I don't know how much they will spend time interpreting it.
Very little has been done. At least there's, you know, publicly. But I'm neglected to mention that we are, we'd be more than happy to talk with any of you if you have information, because, like I say, there just isn't that much written information on at least Hillsborough, and I'm sure most of you have mounds more information that would be helpful to us. So.
Have you gone through the Washington Post Notified members, I mean, that live in Hillsborough area?
Yeah,
we talked
to you
and in the future. And so we're going to be able to know about this for life. And you know more about Hillsborough. David Miller has more preservation.
Wasn't it? Well, there is one reference that said that Hill was in this. I'm not sure of that. I don't think so.
He left no children. He died without no children, so I really have no idea.
Well, we have a whole new area.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was related to the same village.
Well, the only thing I know is that it was named for a man named David.
David. I had never heard that before.
I think this man started the
Significant effect was you got Bagley Park as a result of taxes and foreclosure and resistance and like that. I think maybe when I first came to Forest Grove, I think in the 30s, I would judge that 25% of the land in Forest Grove was owned by the city of Forest Grove as a result of the activities of Warren Construction Company and their activity of paving streets in Forest Grove. Like Forest Grove, at that time, had more paved streets than any other town in Washington County.
That's why they had more paved streets than the land.
Well, I mean, the development then the city of Fort Collins. Then the mayor used to have a 5% deal where he could sell that property along with his real estate business. Now, that do you think that? No, that would be conflict of interest and a scandal, you know, it was a rather effective way for Fred Gardner to get the property back into private ownership. Nobody ever raised a question about it. Is that right?
We bought ground from Fred Gardner.
I don't think he got any more in his commission either.
The 18th, there is a box of old deeds sitting down in the planning department so far. I don't know why it's sitting there.
Wait,
years.
Not for school planning department?
Yeah.
Are they these in just the Forest Grove area?
No, some of them are in the Beaverton area. They're just a sort of deed. Some of them are down in the Iowa Hill area. Some of them are here in this town. Mm-hmm. Quite often in these deeds, you will see that the land goes for the taxes. Time after time, somebody buys it for $25 and then they can't pay the taxes, so then the deed goes and it's owned by someone else.
Pretty depressing, man.
Well, I think in another thing about it, the fact that I was on the school board and we bought that site where the high school is, the abstract have only one transfer. And I came to Mrs. Kennedy, and she was the daughter of, what was the name of the
Kenworthy?
Mrs. Kenworthy, and she was the daughter of, I can't remember.
Mayor.
Mayor. That was the only donation land to Kenworthy.
Oh, before it became, the mayor had the donation land, and then Mrs. Kenworthy got it to inherit.
Tell you another interesting story. There was one mayor, I often wonder when you study history whether you decide that the pioneers came here because they were conversion to Indians or whether they just couldn't make a living at home. Sometimes I think there were many ways to explain the wanderlust. But anyway, the first news story that I had to write coming to Forest Grove involved one of the wild hares of the Lehrer tribe, who, gosh, I don't have any relatives here. Well, anyway, it involved a suit. How long were the right of a common law wife to inherit this neighbor's property? One Martha Traver. And I remember how 3 days out of college I'd have to sweat that story out. I didn't know I'd either get run out of town or super reliable. Rather than and factual. So much.
Which one of the neighbor boys was it that was shot?
This is
Andrew George.
Yeah.
We used to be scared of him. We'd go through down to swim and have creek down there. And if we'd see him around, it didn't take as long to get out of the way. But George, nobody was scared of
him. My dad used to drive his cow down back to my granddad's place, and I'd stand out there with a truck, and he'd give me some nice warm milk.
Well, I was keeping this day or a drove out there. But Patterson, the first came to Forest Grove in 28, that was the site of the Seventh-day Adventist camp meeting, the one that preceded Gladstone. And then before that, it was in the days of culture, you're searching for culture, it was, that was Chautauqua then.
Well, they also had a racetrack around on the front side of it, too. They had horse races.
So I think that was down this way.
They had
one
down there, too.
I don't know
where it
was. Yeah. It was a city park at one time.
Yeah, it was a city park.
I just
heard
something about where they had races. You didn't say horse races, but it's, I thought it was just foot races and that kind of thing. It would have been down across. She might have been. Yeah, somebody did. I'll let you visit if you want, say whatever you want to do, but I will dismiss you as a group so you can do what you sit and visit or whatever. Let's see.
You got
You go to Putin show.
It was like
This was last fall. Things like that. Now that would be.
That is.
So
where's that tree? Oh, that's on the.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the next one. William's dad, one of his No, she sold it in 62. She was a CEO.
He went to his friends and his married. His daughter said Mary Williams. They kept it. Plus, it went to Sewell's name.
I think it was still very good.
I think that's the only
GPS
in the interest of the
No, today.
Everything's in there. Oh, it started, you could all go back to this newly restored. I was going to have her give us a report, tell us all about it, and get workers.
Are the rest of these in?
I suppose that thing's still going on over there.